Oakland is trying to figure out what comes next after thousands of protesters marched through the city Wednesday as part of the Occupy Wall Street movement.
Being around everyone and the energy was great. Everyone's positive. It's just a big, friendly, peaceful atmosphere, but everybody's determined to, you know, get to see justice done for ourselves and for everyone, for, you know, generations to come.
Who is the 99?
I've barely been able to afford my bills. I have a large amount of student loan debt that I don't know if I'll ever be able to get out of, as well as credit card debt. I have a lot of friends and family who don't have health insurance and who don't have jobs. And I'm ready to do anything I can to draw attention to the problem.
Who shut down the port?
We shut down the port!
It's an achievement in human determination.
It seems like this could be something big, that this could really change the world. And in a good way, so I'm happy about that.
Oakland Tribune journalist Josh Richmond has been reporting on and tweeting from the Occupy Oakland protests this week, and he joins me now. Josh, it's been a really turbulent couple of weeks for Oakland, culminating Wednesday with a massive general strike that shut down the port, ending in the wee hours of Thursday morning with vandalism, violence, confrontation with the police. Tell me what you saw this week and how you think it's affecting the city of Oakland.
Well, you know, what we saw was a tremendous response to the call for a general strike. There were anywhere from 7,500, maybe even 10,000 people came out on the streets in the port of Oakland on Wednesday. And the vast majority of them were entirely peaceful. There were families, kids, you know, strollers being pushed through the port of Oakland and whatnot. And I think what you had was, you know, probably no more than 200 or 300 deliberate provocateurs, agitators who soon after midnight decided that they were going to do whatever they had to do to provoke a police response, which is a strategy of sorts. It's just one that leaves a lot of collateral damage afterward.
In response to all of this, the Oakland City Council held a meeting, a hearing on Thursday night. And I want to play a cut from Joe Haraburda. He's the president of the Oakland Chamber of Commerce. Let's listen to what he had to say.
We've had several conversations with businesses that are saying they will consider not renewing their leases unless something is done and done immediately. The damage to the property is unacceptable. The violence is uncalled for. We've got to make change now.
Josh Richmond, is that a consensus view, do you think, that really there's no place for the violence and that in some ways, you know, these businesses, even the port workers and certainly the business owners are getting swept up in this, even though they, too, are part of that 99%?
Absolutely. I think that Don Link, the chairman of the Shattuck Neighborhood Crime Prevention Council, might have said it best on Thursday. He said that by using Oakland as a battlefield for the war on Wall Street, Occupy Oakland is hurting the very people it's trying to help. And I think there is a lot of dissent and disagreement even within the Occupy movement about what the best course of action is going forward. As the barricades were being built that led to the police action on early Thursday morning, I had a lot of protesters, a lot of Occupy people walking up to me and say, what are they doing? You know, this is not the way to get our message across. This is not the way to bring people to the cause. Breaking windows and vandalizing, graffitiing the whole downtown is not going to win people over.
Now, we're going to be talking more about crisis communications, but Oakland Mayor Gene Kwan came under a lot of criticism early on. Has she done anything in the last few days to help herself?
I'm not sure there's anything she can do to help herself. You know, I think generally the police did show a fair degree of restraint on Wednesday and Thursday. There was some vandalism, minor vandalism going on during the day, some broken windows, some graffiti. The police held back. I did not see a single police officer in downtown or in the port while the general strike was going on. Ultimately, you know, Gene Kwan made the decision to clean out the camp, which annoyed everybody who sympathizes with the camp. Then she made the decision to let the camp be re-erected, which annoys everybody who didn't think it should be there in the first place. She doesn't have a lot of friends out there right now.
All right. That's Oakland Tribune journalist Josh Richmond covering the Occupy Oakland protests this week and no doubt next week as well. Josh, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
As Gene Kwan is learning the hard way, city leaders' reactions to crisis can make or break their political careers. That's why some are turning to consultants like Chris Lehane. He's known as a master of disaster. He cut his teeth in the Clinton White House and the presidential campaigns of Al Gore and John Kerry, and he's with us now. Chris Lehane, Gene Kwan, is it a textbook example of how not to handle a crisis like this? What did she do right? What did she do wrong?
I think you sort of have to step back with this whole issue. And I think whether it's Mayor Kwan or here in San Francisco or Los Angeles or New York, you know, to me, the critical moment in all of this is when cities and or mayors made the decision to allow people to camp out. And I've dealt with this a little bit at the federal level. Once you make that decision to allow folks to physically be there, you're basically crossing, you know, the proverbial Rubicon at that point. And it becomes very, very difficult to take a different position.
So once you're there and the campers are there, does it mean that your options are limited?
Actually, I think you can put in place a process, a very transparent and very open process, and you almost win by just being married to the process. You know, we're going to do 25 meetings at these different churches. We're going to talk about these various different issues, and you really just sort of involve and engage people in the process so you become part of the solution. And ultimately, you look at these things historically, you know, the energy ultimately either evolves and manifests itself in a different place, in a different way, or it just dissipates on its own accord.
Most big city mayors, there are some exceptions here in California, the mayor of San Diego is a Republican, but most of them are Democrats, and they tend to be sympathetic to the general message of the protesters. But yet, the Democrats nationally are a little bit reluctant to embrace them because I think there is a fear that it could go awry.
Well, you know, it's a great question, and I've had this discussion with a bunch of, you know, probably half a dozen, if not more, big city mayors in the last couple of weeks. And, you know, one of the, I think, dynamics in all of this is that big city mayors, as you said, tend to be Democrats. And one of the lessons that you are always told as a Democrat is that job number one is public safety, law and order. That is going to dictate, you know, whether you get reelected or not. It really is the bottom line when you're in the mayor's office.
Which is easy to forget in a place that's fairly ideological.
That's right. And so I think a lot of these mayors go into this with almost this law enforcement perspective, right? And so it is the mindset. So when they see a situation like this, they immediately begin to think, oh, this is a public safety issue that I need to get in front of because the broader public in my city is going to be concerned about this from a public safety perspective. When in fact, I think that's a fundamental misreading of this particular type of protest. This was not your traditional public safety issue. And in fact, the middle class, other people in your city basically were in alignment with where folks were coming from. And they were not looking at these people. Now, that may have changed in the last couple of days, by the way. But you know, up until the last couple of days, I think the broader public was basically looking at these folks not as a threat to their own public safety, but as voices expressing concerns.
There are all kinds of crises, of course, that politicians deal with. Some like 9/11 as an extreme example, which had really made the reputation ultimately of Rudy Giuliani. Earthquakes, the same kinds of thing. Does this situation, the Occupy Wall Street movement, is there a big upside or is it mostly downside for politicians, do you think, that has to be managed and the damage minimized?
Well, I think there is a potential upside for the politician or leader or business person or anyone, you know, who is effectively able to sort of step out there and begin offering some ideas and thoughts. I mean, for example, if someone steps out there and says, look, I am going to do a 1% fee on all Wall Street transactions, which impact the banks, and I'm going to use that money in some type of good public way, you know, tuitions to go to college. I think some of these mayors have opportunities here. They can do things specifically where their pension funds are invested, types of decisions they're making with relationships to banks where they could sort of step out and demonstrate some interesting leadership, which sort of becomes the next iteration or chapter.
All right. Chris Lehane, a political and crisis communication consultant. Thanks so much for being here.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.